This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Impunity for crimes that have been committed in the past is absolutely a central driver of this current conflict, that Hameti and Barhan think they can get away with this because they have done in the past.
That was Sarah Jackson, the Deputy Regional Director for Amnesty International's East Africa, Horn and Great Lakes region. Details coming up. Also, a team from ECOWAS leaves Niger without meeting the leaders of new ruling junta. And Ethiopia declares a state of emergency as clashes escalate between the army and local fighters from the Amhara region. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with the top story. A team from the West Africa Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, left Niger without meeting the leader of the junta, which seized power in a coup, General Abdourahamane Tiani, or deposed President Mohamed Bazoum. For further clarification on the ongoing matter, I talked to VOA French to Africa Service Chief Timothy Donangmai.
In fact, according to some sources in Niamey, they didn't even leave the premises of the Niamey airport. Apparently, the new leader said they wanted to protect them from people who support the coup, which is a very specious explanation. So they were not able to meet the coup leaders or to discuss the situation there.
So this thing is falling apart here. You know, ECOWAS, a regional body comprised of 15 West African countries, they couldn't get through to these coup leaders. The African Union, the United Nations have also issued statements condemning the apparent coup. What do you think is going to happen now?
It is hard to tell. And the latest news is that the junta in Niamey revoked military and security cooperation agreements with France, which has about 1,500 soldiers in Niger fighting terror groups there. And the French government said that it's not up to the Putschist regime to revoke those agreements, but only a legitimate government can do that. So much uncertainty on the situation in Niger now, and it's hard to tell how this is going to end.
And Timothy, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Mali especially, which shares borders with Niger, they all have released a joint statement denouncing the ECOWAS sanctions as illegal, illegitimate, and inhumane, and refusing to apply them. And they also said any military intervention against Niger will be considered as a declaration of war against Burkina Faso and Mali. So where did this united front come from? Is this disdain they have, all of them, for France?
Yeah, this unexpected element is complicating the equation now in Niger. And I think all of those countries that you named, all of the regimes there, military regimes, they went through ECOWAS sanctions, UN, AU statements against coups. So they were kind of isolated, and now they have company. There are now four countries that are led by Putschist juntas. So, you know, they decided to band together and to form a front against ECOWAS, against France. And as we discussed yesterday, anytime you're against France in Francophone Africa, people applaud you. At least the street applauds you.
And Timothy, lastly, let me ask you, these coup d'etats, overthrowing a person like Bazoum in Burkina Faso, in Mali. So now, should we like conclude that these coup d'etats are not actually to overthrow the leader of that country, but to actually overthrow France?
Yes, I think at the bottom of all this, the internal issues, the coup leaders try to peg it on France. You know, it's a convenient explanation for their action. But in the case of Niger, it was said that President Bazoum was in the process of firing the head of his presidential guard. And so that guy, he would have lost his job. And so the only way to keep his job was to go through a coup.
That was VOA French to Africa's chief, Timothy Donangmai. Ethiopia's federal government today declared a state of emergency as violent clashes escalate between the national army and local fighters from the northern region of Amhara. The French news agency AFP says the statement did not make clear if the state of emergency applied to nationwide or just to the Amhara region, which lies to the north of the capital Addis Ababa. The government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed did not reply immediately to questions from AFP. Clashes in the Amhara region between the National Army and local fighters have escalated in recent weeks, prompting travel warnings from foreign governments and the cancellation of flights by the national carrier Ethiopian Airlines. Tensions have been rising since April, when the federal government announced it was dismantling regional forces, including in the Amhara region, where nationalists felt the move would weaken Ethiopia's second most populous region. Amnesty International says Sudan's warring military factions are committing war crimes as the country has been ravaged by more than 3 months of violence. The group has documented premeditated attacks against civilians, sexual violence, and action that amounts to war crimes. In the Darfur region, Amnesty says some communities are targeted because of their ethnic identity, leading to hundreds of thousands fleeing into neighboring Chad. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Human rights organization Amnesty International warns the conflict in Sudan and abuses against innocent people amount to war crimes. Sarah Jackson is the deputy regional director for Amnesty's East Africa, Horn and Great Lakes.
It shows how serious the war crimes are that are being committed by the rapid support forces and the Sudanese armed forces in the context of the current conflict, where we see untold death and destruction.
Sudan security factions turned their guns against each other in April in what appears to be a power struggle between the leader of Sudan's sovereign council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the paramilitary rapid support forces led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti. The conflict has killed thousands and displaced 4 million people from their homes, who now are living in dire situations. The human rights group's investigators spoke to at least 180 Sudanese in and out of the country to document attacks on civilians, humanitarian infrastructure and sexual violence against women and girls. Amnesty International Somalia and Sudan researcher Abdullahi Hassan says the group has evidence to back up the accounts of abuses taking place in the country.
The report is also supported by other evidence, including digital evidence, which is verified by our evidence lab team, including photos, videos, satellite imagery, and forensic reports, both in Khartoum and in Darfur, and particularly in Western Darfur. In Western Darfur, particularly, we were able to document targeted, ethnically motivated attacks carried out by the RSF and Arab militias on ethnic Masalit people.
It is not the first time Sudan's army leaders and militias have been accused of war crimes. The International Criminal Court in The Hague issued 4 arrest warrants, including former President Omar al-Bashir's relation to the conflict in Darfur between 2003 and 2008 on charges of war crimes and genocide. Last month, the ICC launched an investigation into the conflict in the Darfur region, where armed groups are accused of killings, rapes, arson, population displacement and crimes affecting children. Jackson says lack of accountability for the past atrocities is enabling some leaders and armed individuals to continue to carry out attacks.
Impunity for crimes that have been committed in the past is absolutely a central driver of this current conflict, that Hemeti and Berhan think they can get away with this because they have done in the past. So it's really vital that accountability is central to any solution of the current situation, and families of victims and survivors of abuses deserve justice, they deserve truth, and they deserve reparations.
Jackson says lack of accountability for past atrocities is enabling some leaders and armed individuals to continue to carry out attacks. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
The U.S. government says it is advancing global food security by helping families and individuals meet their basic need for food. But late yesterday, top U.S. aid officials accused Russia of stifling such efforts with its recent decision to abandon the so-called Black Sea Grain Initiative, accelerating the devastating impact on food security in Africa. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking from Washington, D.C. via a virtual news briefing, U.S. officials described the impact of no longer shipping grain from Ukrainian ports to places in need, including Africa, and the U.S. effort to strengthen food systems on the continent. Since August last year, when the first ship departed under the Black Sea Grain Initiative through its termination last month, the U.S. officials said Ukraine shipped nearly 33 million metric tons of desperately needed grain and oil seeds to global markets. Isobel Coleman is the Deputy Administrator for Policy and Programming at the United States Agency for International Development, USAID. She said Russian President Vladimir Putin's refusal to continue the deal is hurting the world.
Since the beginning of this war, he has used food as a weapon of war, and now he's made clear that he's not only intent on trying to cause mass devastation in Ukraine, but also around the world. In Africa, in the Middle East, and elsewhere, where people depend on Ukrainian food to feed their families. We have to remember that all of the food exported from Ukraine serves a critical role for the world's poor, even if it doesn't go directly to food insecure areas.
Putin has previously claimed that Ukrainian exports from the Black Sea benefit the richest countries, not the poorest. Coleman disputes that.
This is simply a lie. In fact, nearly two-thirds of Ukraine's wheat exports through the Black Sea Grain Initiative have gone to developing countries, and almost 20% have gone to the very least developed countries. Every spike in global grain prices, every wasted harvest, increases the risk of another parent who cannot feed their child.
Erin Elizabeth Marquis is the USAID Assistant Administrator in the Bureau for Europe and Eurasia, who recently visited Ukraine.
Just under 2 weeks ago, I was standing in the port of Odessa, accompanying USAID's Administrator Samantha Power on her second trip into Ukraine. Before Russia's full-scale invasion last February, Odessa felt like the very center of life. It was Ukraine's gateway to the world, and every day there was a spirited bustle as Ukraine's precious gold, that is its grain, went from Odessa to feed the world.
Yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced $362 million in additional assistance for countries facing severe food insecurity, which has been exacerbated by Russia's war in Ukraine and its withdrawal from the Black Sea Grain Initiative. The funding will strengthen the resilience of vulnerable communities in Africa as well as in Haiti by bolstering their capacity to combat malnutrition and increase food security. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. The Supreme Court of Zimbabwe has ruled that 16 opposition candidates who had been barred from running in the upcoming elections have been reinstated on the ballot. They include 12 candidates from the Citizens Coalition for Change and four others. Voters elect new parliamentarians and president on August 23rd. Rutendo Mawiri in Harare has more.
Delivering the judgment on Thursday in Harare, a member of the three-panel bench, Justice Lekani Mwaera, said the decision of the High Court in Bulawayo be set aside. 12 Bulawayo residents from different constituencies had approached the courts arguing that opposition political party candidates and some independent candidates had submitted their nomination papers after the 4 p.m. deadline as required by law. One of the lawyers representing Citizens Coalition for Change, Doug Coulthard, confirmed the ruling.
That decision has been set aside. Those MPs are on the ballot.
Fadzai Mahere is the acting spokesperson for the Citizens Coalition for Change.
We're relieved because at least the people of Bulawayo will be able to choose leaders of their own. It would have been a coup on the will of the people for them to be removed.
Among those allowed to compete are deputy acting spokesperson of the Citizens Coalition for Change and candidates from Bulawayo North and South constituencies, as well as those from Cowdery Park and Emakandeni Luveve. The director of information for the ruling ZANU-PF party, Farai Marapira, told VOA that the ruling is a clear indication of the independence of the judiciary. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty Thursday to 4 charges of criminal conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from the courthouse.
Not guilty. That's the plea former President Donald Trump entered Thursday in a Washington courtroom, just down the street from the U.S. Capitol that was attacked on January 6, 2021, by rioters attempting to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Trump answered charges handed down from a grand jury of American citizens based on a U.S. Department of Justice investigation, alleging he committed conspiracy to defraud the government, obstructed an official proceeding, and conspired to obstruct an official proceeding. Trump said in a news conference later Thursday that he had the constitutional right to free speech to voice concerns about the election.
This is a persecution of a political opponent. This was never supposed to happen in America.
But his own vice president, who could be a key witness in the upcoming trial, disagrees.
I want the American people to know that I had no right to overturn the election. And then on that day, President Trump asked me to put him over the Constitution, but I chose the Constitution.
Trump, who is the current frontrunner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, is not under arrest and will undergo a trial in the upcoming months. Brookings Institution fellow Elaine Kamark.
We're in sort of uncharted territory. He can certainly run right now under indictment because he's not been proven guilty of anything, right? He's just been charged with crimes. And the way this will play out is we won't have a lot of these decisions till next year, possibly even after the election.
Outside the courthouse Thursday, the former president's supporters said they still strongly support him.
I really believe that he's defending the people, and we're in return showing our support to him, you know, with our freedom of speech.
But for many Americans, just hundreds of yards from the Capitol that was attacked, the charges are a sign Trump is being held accountable.
It's very important that this is all being documented officially in writing, so that nothing happens like this in our country again, because this was a breaking point.
Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
As part of our 60th anniversary celebrations, we're looking at how VOA's English to Africa service has evolved over the years. One big change is our increasing effort to look at modern African culture, entrepreneurship, and changing making issues. Jackson Mfungane has been leading that effort as host of the weekly show Up Front. He spoke with editor Kate Pond-Dawson about the show. He starts about how it began.
In 2007, with the acknowledgement that Africa is the youngest continent, the average age of over 70% under the age of 25, we realized that we are needing to tap into this new growing young demographic of the continent, that our programming needs to reflect the needs and the desires and the aspirations of this new demographic. And so in 2007, we launched Upfront. And at the time it was launched, it was the only cross-continental show. I was co-hosting the show with Nadia Sami in Cape Town, South Africa. She later moved to Johannesburg, South Africa. That went on up until 2016. And then I took over the helm as the host of the show since then. And we've had a rotation of co-hosts here and there, but our mission is to reflect the voices of young Africans on the continent, whether it is, you know, talking about politics, leadership, issues of entrepreneurship, talking about the changing technological landscape, and also understanding that consumer habits are changing. Young people most likely will not consume information the same way as the older demographic. And so because of that, we incorporated a lot of social media.
What drives you to find all of these interesting
right
topics?
I love to know about different things. Sometimes my friends would call me an encyclopedia of useless information because I'm very curious about things. So I wanted to take that curiosity to serve my listeners. And therefore, I don't want to be pigeonholed into, you know, just doing entrepreneurship, stories about entrepreneurship or stories just about politics. I wanted to reflect the diversity. And I also want to clarify that even though the show has a youthful spin to it, it is not necessarily just a youth show. I like to demystify this idea of what a youth show is. A youth show is a show like any other show because young people are as much interested in things that adults are interested in. So they're interested in stories of success about an entrepreneur who has created an app. They're also interested in a coup d'etat that is happening in Mali or in Ghana, because, again, they are the majority of the people in these countries. And so for whatever happens in these countries also affects them. I wanted it to be as diverse and reflective of the diversity of the continent in our interests, in our consumer habits, how we are changing our consumer habits based on changing technologies.
That was Kate Pound-Dawson talking to VOA's Jackson Mfunganyi. We also asked for comments from you on our service, and dozens of people have shared their thoughts about our programs. Here are several.
My name is Daniel Junior Pesima from Freetown, Sierra Leone, and I like all your programs. I'm very much happy for the 60-year celebration.
Abdulaziz Adetunwa in Maiduguri, Nigeria. VOA, I sincerely rejoice with you. Your programs are well educative and create more awareness on so many issues.
My name is Innocent Onyebuchim Okwara, and I'm speaking from Amolumbiri in Mbaitoli local government area of Imo State, Nigeria, in West Africa. I love VOA Africa. That's how I wake up every morning.
This is Denchair Major from Juba, South Sudan. As VOA English to Africa service celebrates its 6 years of broadcast across Africa, I would like to thank and appreciate VOA and its amazing journalists for their tireless effort in covering news across Africa. Voice of America remains my rightful a reliable source of news and information. In this also, I would like to applaud and appreciate the hosts and co-hosts of some of my favorite programs. As follow, Daybreak African News host James Batty, International Edition host Cindy O'Four, Lori London, and Steve Miller. African News Tonight host, he is Sweep, South Sudan in Focus hosts John Tanza and Neville Viaggio. And lastly, but not least, Sunny Side of Sport host Sunny Young.
My name is Prince John Ezekiel. Speaking from Lagos, Nigeria, Victoria Island. Kudos to Victoria, Voice of America African Service. It's been long I've been hearing, listening to this station. Even when I was young, my father tune in Voice of America radio. That was in early 70s. He died in the year 2000, at the age of 108 years. Since then, I've taken Voice of America, African Service. Voice of America generally as my favorite radio station. I do enjoy your program. Thank you very much, Voice of America.
Thank you all. We appreciate your loyalties. And for all our sports fans, you can hear Barry Mon when he talks about old times with Sunny Young, the host of our Sunny Side of Sports program. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, Helen Cordian, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.